This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. We think a lot these days about dueling realities, red states versus blue, a nation cleaved in half. It's not a new phenomenon. In fact, ever since the Civil War ended, much of the South continues to see that conflict as a noble struggle of honor and self-determination led by heroic figures. Today, that perspective takes the form of what some historians call the cult of the lost cause, an ongoing narrative battle that mythologizes the Civil War by obscuring our nation's shameful past.
This cult had one goal and one goal only, through monuments and through other means to rewrite history, to hide the truth, which is that the Confederacy was on the wrong side of humanity.
That's New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu speaking last week to mark the removal of four of the city's monuments. After fierce opposition and a multi-year legal battle, New Orleans no longer hosts statues of Confederate President Jefferson Davis, Generals P.G.T. Beauregard and Robert E. Lee, and an obelisk exalting the Battle of Liberty Place, a historic racist attack. Landrieu described the significance of these monuments in the starkest terms.
These statues are not just stone and metal. They're not just innocent remembrances of a benign history. These monuments celebrate a fictional, sanitized Confederacy, ignoring the death, ignoring the enslavement, ignoring the terror that it actually stood for. And after the Civil War, these monuments were part of that terrorism, as much as burning a cross on someone's lawn. They were erected purposefully to send a strong message to all who walked in the shadows about who was still in charge in this city.
And they didn't yield their ground without a fight.
Protests erupted in New Orleans when the city decided to remove the monuments.
Wearing masks to protect their identities, crews worked through the night to avoid large-scale protests.
Security measures, including bulletproof vests, had to be taken to protect the workers who have received death threats.
Malcolm Suber is a historian and co-founder of Take 'em Down NOLA, a group that aims to sweep New Orleans Confederate memorials into the dustbin of history. He says it's part of a decades-long struggle by the black community to tell a truer story of the city. Suber traces the movement to 1954, when black parents, students, and teachers protested the celebration of John McDonough Day. McDonough is thought to have been the largest slaveholder in antebellum New Orleans and endowed many of the city's public schools, schools that, of course, were segregated.
The little black kids would have to bake in the sun while the white kids were laying flowers on the bust of John McDonough. The black community called a boycott, and it was 100% effective. This was the first public protestation of these white supremacy monuments, and it just snowballed from there.
When Suber moved to New Orleans in 1978, there were dozens of public schools named for slaveholders. Eventually, his group persuaded the school board to allow parents to vote on new names, and his group had another big victory in the 1980s.
We got permission from the highway department to remove the white supremacy monument, and that monument, of course, was one that commemorated the Battle of Liberty Place, so-called.
Now, that was a brief victory. You got that monument taken down, but then a few years later, the city put it right back up. And then it was finally dismantled again in the latest round of removals. But this wasn't some anodyne monument to the heroism of Confederate troops or leaders. The Battle of Liberty Place was another beast altogether.
So basically, a group called the White League, which was made up of Confederate veterans and the sons and daughters of the rich white slave-owning class in New Orleans, proclaimed themselves openly as a group that was bent upon restoring white supremacy in Louisiana. In September of 1874, they launched a coup d'etat against the government of the state of Louisiana and went into battle against the Metropolitan Police Force, which was an integrated police force, had black and white police officers. 14 years later, in 1871, they decided to dedicate a monument to that event. And in 1905, they added a plaque to that monument. People in the black community have always called that the White Supremacy Monument, and the white people, of course, call it the Battle of Liberty Place Monument.
Over 160-some years, people have come to believe that in building these monuments, they are commemorating something that is not, as you characterize it, you know, white supremacy, but something larger and greater, such as an entire way of life. How have they come to be so deluded about the nature of the Civil War and of slavery?
Well, we, of course, know that the Civil War was fought on behalf of the plantation owners, but it was fought by ordinary white peasants, basically. And so in order to buffer and to explain to people why so much blood was shed in the South during the Civil War, they had to make a myth that what they were fighting for was not, in fact, the enslavement of African people, but it was something had to do with home and self-determination for the South. That myth grew and grew and grew. And it grew in the context that there was no real suppression of the planter class after their rebellion and treason against the United States government. Anywhere else in the world, if you had waged war against the central government, not only would you have been stripped, but many of you would have been executed. The rest of you would have been put in jail, and all of your symbols would have been suppressed. But we had the very opposite of that occurring in the South because, as I always say, we won the battle, but we lost the war. And the war grew up among Southern historians to pretend that the planter class in the South, they were fighting to protect the honor of the South rather than they were fighting to protect their ownership of chattel slaves.
Mayor Landrieu gave a speech on the occasion of having these things torn down that was most eloquent.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the scales fell from anybody's eyes if they said, oh, for goodness sakes, of course, now I understand why these are toxic, not only to black Louisianans, but everybody?
Well, there has not been one member of the white ruling class that has come out in support of taking down these monuments. They are so caught up in the myth of these statues and so protective because it was their family members who paid to put these things up in the first place. And so they see this as part of their heritage, but they are so blinded by white supremacy, their attitude is, we run this city, this is our city, and we do what we want to do, and you just got to grin and bear it.
Now, when the statuary disappeared, it's not as though you and the rest of Take 'em Down NOLA put the mayor on your shoulders and walked through the city shouting for he's a jolly good fellow, hip, hip, hooray. You're not really satisfied with this gesture.
How can you just take down four when we got hundreds of street names, school names, and statuary dedicated to white supremacy and the Confederacy? We're not interested in tokens, and we won't be satisfied until all of those are done away with. This is what I raised with Mitch 2 years ago. I said, listen, if we take down one statue, the rich whites who run the city are going to be pissed. If you take down two, they're going to be pissed. So since they're going to be pissed no matter what you do, go ahead and do the complete job. Let's get this over and get this behind us.
I understand you run tours in New Orleans called Hidden History.
Yes.
What do you show people about the black experience?
Well, we talk about the entire development of the slave trade here. We talk about the contribution of the African people in the building up of the city. The African people were the workforce. They were the carpenters. They were the iron workers. They were the people who did all the cooking and the cleaning. We just are an answer to the other Chamber of Commerce type tour, which talks about the glory of New Orleans as being one of the richest cities in the world during the antebellum period. Their romanticism is about the enslavement of African people, and we talk about the struggle of African people against enslavement and the fight for equality.
When you give this tour, is there one site, one story that you want people to have etched into their memories?
Well, we go to a site on Royal Street, Cafe Maspero. Cafe Maspero used to be called the Slave Exchange, and they have a plaque on the outside of their building that says this was one of the sites where people were sold. When I first moved here in 1978, it was not just called Cafe Maspero. It was called Cafe Maspero Slave Exchange. A white friend of mine invited me to go to lunch there. I said, why in the hell would I want to eat in a place that sold my people that I was on the menu? So that is one of the sites that gives a real example of the kind of narrative that is presented by the ruling class of New Orleans, and we like to talk about that. An interesting thing happened after Katrina. The hotel owners decided that they were going to replace the black hotel workers with Hispanics. And basically the tourists had a fit, because the tourists come to New Orleans to see black people entertaining them, serving them, waiting on them.
Be subservient like in the old days.
Yes. They say, we want to see some Hispanics. We can go to Houston. And in many ways, that reflects the society that has been carved out and built here in New Orleans.
Malcolm, thank you.
No problem. Have a good day.
Malcolm Suber is a historian and co-founder of Take 'Em Down NOLA, which advocates for the removal of Confederate memorials and symbols in the city of New Orleans.